Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 22nd of October, 2 weeks and 1 day before the presidential election. And we have two guests with us with completely different viewpoints on where this election stands and what the issues are and who is better to lead the country. John McCormick will be joining us the first half hour. He is with the Weekly Standard. Sam Stein will be joining us the second half hour with the Huffington Post. We were, of course, extremely saddened. He was 90 years old, but we looked forward to every interview we ever had with Senator George McGovern, and we thought we would end this hour with just a little portion of an interview that we did with him a few years ago when he was talking about Abraham Lincoln, because he had written a book about Abraham Lincoln. So we will end the interview with a little tribute to him from his own words. And we'll welcome your phone calls all hour long. Tonight, the big debate, the last of the presidential debates, and it's mostly on foreign policy, although I would imagine there will be a few other issues discussed. What would you like to hear the candidates address when it comes to foreign policy? Do you see, so far from what you've heard, substantial differences between President Obama and Governor Romney when it comes to foreign policy? Here's our phone number for you to join this conversation, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And you could always leave messages on our Facebook page, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And a reminder that we will be carrying tonight's debate. It will the coverage will start at 7 o'clock tonight, so you can hear all of that here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John McCormick, our first guest, staff writer for the Weekly Standard. Hello, John. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me here, Kathleen.
Foreign policy tonight, or do you imagine that the candidates will weave their way back to other conversations?
I think it'll have to focus a good amount on foreign policy. You know, Mitt Romney can't exactly respond to a question about Iran's nuclear weapons program by pointing out that the unemployment rate is 8%.
Right.
I do think you'll have come back to foreign policy in domestic policy in two respects. One is obviously defense spending, which, you know, brings in the budget and the deficit back to a foreign policy related issue, and also just the deficit in general. You've had some very high ranking national security figures who have made the claim, I probably wouldn't quite agree with it, but that the debt is our biggest national security issue, because if we go broke, there's no way we can defend ourselves adequately. So I think that you'll see the debt play a role in spending, and defense spending play a role in this foreign policy debate. But other than that, I would expect mostly actually to focus on the issues at hand and the very and complex issues all around the world.
John, do you see substantial differences when it comes to foreign policy? And let's start with the Middle East, particularly in the Middle East, between these two candidates?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think there are maybe different tendencies between the two of them, but I don't think that you have huge differences in specifics. You know, how specifically would Mitt Romney be a tougher negotiator with Iran? Well, you can't really say that publicly. I mean, it's negotiations are done in private. So it's tough to put out there. I mean, is one more likely than the other to make sure Iran doesn't get a nuclear weapon? Well, both of them claim that, but it's really hard for them to make this case in terms of any specifics. You know, it's not like a deficit plan or a tax plan where you can kind of really say, oh, well, he wants to cut the rate to this amount and he wants to raise this rate for the top earners to this amount. It's much clearer on domestic policy. So I do think that there are differences. You know, when it comes to Afghanistan, at the last debate, I think you saw this play out between Joe Biden and Paul Ryan. Joe Biden was very adamant, you know, 2014, no matter what, we're leaving. And all Ryan said was, listen, we agree with the 2014 transition out of Afghanistan. We just want to make sure that our gains are secured. And I actually think that Joe Biden might have taken that a little bit too far. I tried to ask some of the president's top campaign advisors. I said, you know, is that really the case? I mean, is the president ruling out reevaluating the situation in 2013? Is he, you know, if things completely change in the country, is he not going to even consider that we might want to pull out a little bit more slowly, get pulled out in 2015? And his advisor said, listen, I'm not making foreign policy statements tonight. We're going to have the foreign policy debate in a week or so. So I'll leave that to the president. So I think that if the president were being honest, obviously, you know, no president is that hard and fast about something. I do think that, yeah, there does seem to be more of a tendency by the president to, you know, get out of war. He obviously opposed the Iraq war all along. Mitt Romney supported back then. So we'll have a lot of arguments about the past, I think. But in terms of the present and what they'd actually do differently, I think it's not quite as clear a picture.
What is the story about these talks with Iran one-on-one? There were differing stories all weekend. What's the truth? Do you know?
I can't say that I can. I was in Green Lake, Wisconsin with my family. I
love
part of the state.
Oh.
Yeah, but I did read up on that, and it does seem like It's a conflicting stories as to whether or not we're engaging in one-on-one talks. That was a story that came out. The national security spokesman, Tommy Vitor, came out and said, no, that's not the case. So it's not quite clear. I'm not sure how that's going to be able to factor in tonight with these conflicting reports about whether or not we're even considering one-on-one negotiations with Iran.
And what about Libya? Do you imagine we'll have a good amount of conversation about Libya again?
I think that'll have to come up. It's definitely in the news during the last debate. Mitt Romney definitely missed an opportunity, I think, to point out the issues here. You know, there's a twofold issue here, and one is the security issue. Why were these guys not adequately protected? You know, there were just these hearings on Capitol Hill where a U.S. security official, he used to be Special Forces, that his team, his 16-member security force team, was removed from there just earlier this year. They requested repeatedly to the State Department, you know, the ambassador who was killed himself requested repeatedly for more security, and that security was not provided. And the question is, why not? Why wasn't that there? And obviously, you know, the president himself doesn't know about these things, but what happens in anyone's administration ultimately goes back to the president. You know, you can think of George W. Bush and any number of scandals, you know, Abu Ghraib. Not comparing the two, they're obviously very different issues, but obviously in that situation, Bush didn't necessarily know about that specific, you know, prison. But it definitely came back to him. So I think that's one issue. And the second issue is there have been some questions about why the administration didn't clearly call this a pre-planned terrorist attack rather than an act of spontaneous mob violence for a couple weeks. Really, I mean, there were people on Capitol Hill, congressmen, Democrats and Republicans, who both called the Libya attack a pre-planned terrorist attack early on. So the question is, why did they have different intelligence than the White House did, or did the White House have the same intelligence and it was reading something differently, or did it know that it was a pre-planned terrorist attack and it didn't want to bring that up because his campaign is running on the fact that Osama bin Laden is dead and al-Qaeda is on the run, and a terrorist attack on a vulnerable U.S. Consulate would kind of undercut that. So I think that's the issue with Libya. It's kind of hard to get into for Mitt Romney, as we saw last week. I don't know if he's going to want to be nitpicking on this. I agree with my boss. There's an editorial in the Weekly Standard this week by William Kristol saying Mitt Romney's real goal here is to be presidential, to be above it all, to not get into the bickering that went on last week. I thought that was really unappealing from both candidates last week, where they kind of interrupted each other and complained to the moderator about their time limits. I think that's something they both want to avoid tonight.
And is it a bigger task for Governor Romney? Simply, if you're president, you're dealing with foreign affairs issues all the time. Is his studying a little bit more fierce than Obama's would be? Although Obama did so badly in the first debate, he's probably been studying pretty hard, too. But is he at a disadvantage?
I think so. I think whenever you're already the commander-in-chief, it's much easier for people to think of you in that role. So I do think that Obama has the upper hand on foreign policy. He was the commander-in-chief who called in the mission to take out Osama bin Laden. I think that Mitt Romney would be wise to credit the president with that decision and not to, you know, downplay it or anything like that tonight. I do think that the president has an upper hand, but not a huge one. If you look at the polls, he probably has a 2, 3, 4, 5-point advantage on foreign policy, whereas Mitt Romney would have a similar size lead, maybe even bigger on the economy. So this is an advantage for the president, but I don't know how much foreign policy will play into voters' minds when they go to the polls. They obviously want someone who is who is a plausible, strong commander-in-chief. But I don't know in terms of specific issues. I don't think voters are really having a checklist that they're trying to go through on these different foreign policy questions like Syria, Libya, and Afghanistan.
John McCormick, our guest, the first half of All Things Political, staff writer for the Weekly Standard. We welcome your phone calls. Final debate tonight. What do you want to hear? What do you want to talk about 2 weeks and one day before the election? 800-486-8655 is our number, and lines are open for you at this very moment. You can also send an email, talk@WPR.org, and go to our Facebook page, because we will read good comments from that as well, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Starting our calls with Dave in Eau Claire. Hi, Dave.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. Now, former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice brought up a very important topic that gets little discussion in her speech at the Republican National Convention. She pointed out that President Obama has one of the most dismal records in creating trade pacts, trade agreements with foreign governments of any president in history. And it's my belief that if you have good global trade, that's the best deterrent to global warfare that we can have. And I'd like to hear your comments on that.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely an opportunity for Mitt Romney to bring the foreign policy debate over towards the economy in more of an economic-oriented way. I think that that's one of his criticisms, that he hasn't opened up enough trade. He's also criticized President Obama for not being tough enough on China. So that's a more delicate situation. I'm not sure that Mitt Romney's China policy is something I necessarily agree with. It definitely plays well. I think that they think that plays well in places like Ohio, Midwestern states, maybe even Wisconsin, where manufacturing is suffering in part due to China. But I'm not sure that we really want to be getting into a trade war with China. So I think that there's definitely something to that in terms of signing trade agreements. The president definitely has dragged his feet on a number of those trade agreements. And I think Mitt Romney will try and bring that up tonight, but I don't know how much it'll play out.
I'm sure he'll bring up, because he's brought it up several times before, the issue of China being a currency manipulator.
Definitely. I think that that's his big thing. And again, when he's suffering in a place like Ohio right now, and where that could decide the election, I think that he'll definitely try and talk a lot about China, and that he'll be tougher in negotiating with them. In terms of the actual policy, I'm not sure how far we want to go down a road towards, you know, a trade war with China, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well, the other issue that has to come up, because, again, it would play well in Ohio and perhaps some other industrial Midwest states, is this whole issue of the outsourcing of jobs to not only China, but to Southeast Asia, et cetera. Where does free trade play into all of that? I mean, it's a complicated issue, but it certainly is front and center for a lot of American workers, don't you think, John?
I do think so. I mean, I think that I've seen, just covering congressional races, you know, I think the Democrats really do think that, you know, being against free trade is a good issue for them in, you know, in manufacturing districts, upstate New York, rural Ohio, Pennsylvania, maybe even some parts of Wisconsin. In terms of the actual substance of the issue, it's a difficult issue. I mean, some of these jobs are jobs that are going overseas, and you hope that they come back with new ones. I'm a little conflicted in terms of trade. You know, I don't know exactly where I come down. I do think that in general, free trade is the best way to go. It's led to prosperity, but you do want to keep a certain base of manufacturing, and these are jobs that are good jobs. I do think that in some places, you know, we've seen, in terms of the actual policy, I don't know if this is going to play a role in the debate tonight, but, you know, some places you've seen manufacturing jobs spring up where, you know, in the South, where there aren't these onerous regulations that you have in Michigan from the union on car manufacturers. So you've got good paying people, jobs for people making cars down in the South with Nissan, Hyundai, in America. So I think that that's an issue. I don't know. I don't think that people will probably get into that level of detail in a foreign policy debate tonight.
What do you think of the moderator? Are you happy with Bob Schieffer?
You know, I don't have a real strong opinion about Bob Schieffer. Just looking at the other moderators, you know, I do think that people criticize Jim Lehrer because he didn't really, you know, control the debate. He wasn't really adamant about, you know, chasing after the candidates and making them answer specific questions. But I really like that format. You know, there are different styles. His style was basically to say, Healthcare, what are your differences? Talk to each other. Taxes, what are your differences? Talk to each other. I saw they actually mixed up those two styles on the Tommy Thompson, Tammy Baldwin debate last Thursday night. And I think it works out really well. I actually prefer that, where candidates don't, I mean, just 2 minutes really isn't enough to discuss something intelligently. So I did like having more. I think that in general, I thought that the other two moderators were pretty good. Martha Raddatz was better on foreign policy. I thought that on domestic policy, she was a little tougher on Reiner. And I think Candy Crowley did a pretty good job, except for towards the end where she sort of decided to weigh in President Obama's favor on the Libya issue, and then later said that Mitt Romney was right in the main. I think that even if one candidate were completely right, the moderator's job is never to help a candidate answer a question. I think it's always to pose the questions and get them to answer questions, but not necessarily to help one candidate out or the other, even if she has the right answer. And in this case, she didn't. So that was pretty bad. But I don't really have a strong opinion on Bob Schieffer. I've seen him interview people a couple times. He doesn't strike me as the most dogged questioner, but I think that he'll come in there with all the main topics and put those before the American people.
John McCormick, our guest, the first half hour. Second half hour, Sam Stein, who is White House correspondent for Huffington Post. Our phone number. Join the conversation. We're only a couple weeks away. What do you want to hear the presidential candidates talk about tonight during their final debate? We certainly welcome your phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. The email is talk@WPR.org. And the Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John McCormick, staff writer for the Weekly Standard, our guest the first half hour, will return to phone calls momentarily. I guess we have reached the point, John, though some of us have been doing this for some months, but people are starting to look at polls now fairly carefully. What are you looking at? What states do you think are crucial? You mentioned Ohio, and a lot of people have said it's Ohio that will determine this election. Is it?
It's Ohio or Wisconsin. That's what I'm. That's the way I'm looking at it right now. I think that if Mitt Romney does not win Ohio, he must win Wisconsin. If you can go around and play on the site. It's called 270towin.com. You can look at the Electoral College. And the way I just did it right now is I looked at the Real Clear Politics average, and I gave Mitt Romney every state where he's winning by, you know, even a 0.1 percentage points. That's not necessarily the case, but if he's going to win, he's got to win all those states. And then it comes down to, he's still about, you know, that would give him New Hampshire, Florida, Virginia, North Carolina, and Colorado, and then he'd basically have to win either Wisconsin or Ohio would put him over the top. One of those two states he'd need to win. You could also imagine some scenario without Ohio where he'd pick up Wisconsin, New Hampshire, and Iowa and Nevada, but I think that's a little tougher of a climb because Nevada has a very large Latino population, a group of voters that votes very strongly for the Democratic candidate, and a state that did not go Republican even in the very good year of 2010. So I think that really, I do think that if Ohio doesn't come through, that he'll have to get Wisconsin. It's pretty tough to do just based historically, because usually Wisconsin is a little bit more Democratic than Ohio. So you'd expect that if Ohio is going Democratic by a point or 2 points, that Wisconsin is going Democratic by 3 or 4 or 5. And maybe that could be different this year for a couple reasons. And one would be that the auto bailout is a very good issue for the president in Ohio.
Yes.
And not necessarily in Wisconsin, where, I mean, there was some debate about that in the last debate. But at the very least, you know, the Janesville plant was not saved by the auto bailout. We know that much. So furthermore, Ohio has been carpet bombed by television ads. I just read a Nielsen study that said that there had been 51,000 units of ads. I'm not even sure what that measured, whether it was individual ads, to 17,000 Romney ads in Ohio from the first of the year through the beginning of September. Now, I think that narrows a little bit when you factor in outside groups, but really the president has really just completely, and his allies, carpet bombed Ohio. Wisconsin, on the other hand, has had about 1/5 of those ads on the presidential end. So if you think you've been inundated with political ads at the presidential level, just you have no idea what it's like unless you really are in Ohio. So I do think there might be more room. Wisconsin does seem to be a little bit of a swingier state. I mean, if I were running the Romney campaign and the way I looked at the Electoral College members today, I don't see why you wouldn't send Paul Ryan to the state for 4 or 5 days in the next week and just crisscross the state, try and hit every media market, do some town hall meetings, and maybe try and get a little hometown boy effect going for the Romney campaign. So I do think that if he doesn't win Ohio, it's very, very tough. He's got to win Wisconsin, mm-hmm. probably.
I read last week, though, John, that the number one media buy in the country last week was Green Bay, Wisconsin. Green Bay.
Things are heating up then. So Green Bay is obviously a part of a swing district. So that the numbers I mentioned about Ohio is going back to September. So maybe now both campaigns do see how crucial Wisconsin is as well, just right up there with Ohio. So I do think that you'll see a lot more intensity in campaigning in the state these final 2 weeks. I would expect the candidates. I remember John Kerry ended up spending the night, I think, in UW La Crosse in 2004 before election night, because Wisconsin is one of the few states where you have same-day voter registration. In most states, you have to go and register weeks or a month in advance before you can go to the polls. So Wisconsin is a state where you can, as long as you're a resident for a long enough period of time, you can go to the votes on election day and vote. So I think you're going to have a big push there the next 2 weeks.
Mitch in Green Bay. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
With the foreign policy we've got and stuff like this, I'd like to see them surprise the candidates on there and check the labels of everything they're wearing. And if none of it's made in USA, we remove it and take it off the stage.
How about that,
John? I don't know,
John,
if you really want to see that, do we?
What an interesting thought. Oh, yeah. Now I'll be thinking about that as I look at their apparel tonight. Thank you very much, Mitch, for the call. All right. Well, anything else that you really want them to address tonight that has not been talked about thus far in the two previous presidential debates?
It has not been talked about in the two previous presidential debates. I don't think so. Nothing really comes to mind. I mean, I do think that there are some questions that have been downplayed. In the past debate, but those are on the domestic end. I think that in the past debate, there were no questions about Obamacare. There were no questions specifically about the debt. And that was the same as the vice presidential debate between Paul Ryan and Joe Biden. That was by a foreign affairs correspondent. She was a moderator, so that was her strength. But she didn't ask a specific question about the debt or Obamacare. I do think those are two huge pressing issues. But I don't think that there's anything on the foreign policy end. I think that there's a wide array of issues. I think that we'll probably get to them mostly tonight. But in terms of questions that haven't really been asked or de-emphasized, I'm more concerned about the debt. But I guess that'll play into that probably in the foreign policy discussion.
Thank you, John, so much for being with us. John McCormick, staff writer for the Weekly Standard. We continue all things political, different guests, different perspective, and we continue asking for your phone calls as we all watch the debate tonight, which I must tell you, the coverage will start. The debate's at 8 o'clock, but the coverage will start at 7 o'clock tonight here on the Ideas Network, so you know a place on the radio where you can listen to what's going on. Sam Stein joining us momentarily. He is White House correspondent for Huffington Post. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
You shall not crucify mankind upon a cross of gold.
Shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
Government is not the solution to our problem.
Do not have sexual relations with that woman.
Constitute an axis of evil.
May God grant each one of us the wisdom to cherish this good land and to meet the great challenge that beckons us home.
Sam Stein joining us now. Sam is political editor and White House correspondent for Huffington Post, and he's a contributor to MSNBC. Sam, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Number three is tonight. What are you looking for, sir?
Well, it depends if I'm going to watch the games or
no,
or the presidential debate. You know, some good sports going on tonight.
So. I know.
Well, you know, it's going to be, I guess the conventional wisdom is that of the three debates, this one's going to be sort of the least consequential, the least amount of fireworks. This just happens to be an election in which foreign policy hasn't been a huge issue. That, of course, changes a little bit because of the whole controversy now surrounding the attacks in Benghazi.
Yes.
And to what extent the administration had intelligence failures. But if you look at any of the, you know, polling data, foreign policy ranks near the bottom of people's top concerns. And so, I don't expect much to come of it unless someone mispronounces a country's name or forgets the name of a world leader. These two will probably have sharp jabs at each other, but beyond that, I'm not sure we'll get much out of it.
Well, how do you explain that foreign policy isn't front and center after all we've been through the last, it's hard to imagine.
Well, I think people have grown accustomed in some respects to the idea that we'd have troops overseas involved in wars of some sort. I think we've grown accustomed to the notion that terrorism is a somewhat unsolvable dilemma that you can't fully eradicate, but you can try to control. And I think, obviously, the main thing is that after you go through a recession, your top concerns tend to be about what's happening with your own financial situation and not with the very small number of our population that's overseas fighting a war. And so for all those reasons, particularly the last one, I think you've ended up with an election that's almost squarely on the economy and pocketbook concerns and very little on foreign policy. And it's remarkable because the last time we had an incumbent running for re-election, 2004, I mean, it was all about foreign policy. It was literally a referendum on Iraq.
Right.
And, it's just a different scenario this time around.
Yeah. You mentioned the sporting events, Game 7, baseball, Monday Night Football. Will it be the lowest number of people watching, do you think, because of those events? You do.
Well, not just because of those events. I think, foreign policy is not the biggest draw for these people. I think they've seen these candidates twice now. Some of them are not going to come back for a third time because they've made up their mind and they don't have any interest. And then, of course, the other events that are conflicting with them, I think, will play a role. But I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a much smaller audience tonight.
Sam, what are you going to watch tonight?
Well, obviously the exchange over Libya is going to be interesting. There's so much new information surfacing, almost it feels like on an hourly basis, that we don't know how it's going to play. We don't know the extent to which Mitt Romney is going to make it an issue. Obviously, in the last debate, the sort of defining moment was when he accused the president for not calling it an act of terror, only to be corrected.
Right.
And that was a real misstep, or at least it was sort of one of those things that he wished hadn't happened, because it stayed as the sort of indelible image of the debate. And I wonder to what extent he's nervous about having that happen again.
I think you're right. That really did stop the room, I thought.
Yeah, and it's funny because the first debate, which was a clear victory for Romney, didn't produce one of those moments that you look back and remember. I've talked to a lot of people. I say, what was the one line from the first debate you remember the most? No one can really remember. But the second debate did produce a moment like that that people will, are talking about and still remember, and that was Candy Crowley, of course, saying, actually, governor, he did mention it. And, I think if I were the Romney campaign, there's a, clearly there's going to be a bit of hesitancy to swing like that again. Now, on the flip side, what's hurting Obama going into this debate is that this is going to be a debate squarely about his foreign policy agenda. He's the president. He sets the agenda.
Yes.
And, the questions you would have to imagine are going to primarily center around the decisions he's made, and that he's going to be pressed for, a rationalization or justification for them, and then Mitt Romney will be pressed for what he would do differently.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we're going to get a lot of questions about Mitt Romney. We might, but it's not going to be as much about Mitt Romney's foreign policy agenda. It's going to be about what he would do differently from Obama, and I think that's an inherent disadvantage to the president. That said, he has that sort of aura as commander-in-chief. People recognize that he's led through crises. And I think he, you know, if you look at any of the polling data, he seems to enjoy a small advantage on handling foreign policy. So, you know, it could be a mixed bag here.
What is the story on Iran? Did the White House want this possible discussion point up that there will be one-on-one talks with Iran, or what happened with that?
If they did, they backtracked immediately. So I'm not sure. What word broke on Saturday that the Iranian government and the White House had tentatively agreed, I guess, to one-on-one discussions post-election. But then the White House denied it. The thing is, the Times, which reported it, had such good sourcing on it. High administration officials, they had, you know, briefings and stuff like that, that you read it and you thought, wow, this is very definitive and exhausting reporting. This must be true. I'm having trouble gaming out what the political implications are for it. You could make a case that it's good for the White House to have it out there because it shows that the sanctions are bringing the Iranians to the table. On the flip side, you can make the case that it's bad for the White House to have it out there because why would you want to be, you know, if Mitt Romney's doing this whole bellicose thing, you know, get tough on Iran, does it really make sense for the president to say, yes, I'm willing to talk to the Iranians? I mean, there's that whole question of what are the conditions by which you meet. And this is something that Obama dealt with in 2008 when he said, sort of famously now, that he would meet without preconditions. And, you know, it's a mixed bag. It's tough politically to game out what these things mean.
Let's go to phone calls. We have many of them, starting with Ray in Milwaukee. Hi, Ray.
Good morning. I have one tip for Mr. Obama tonight. When Mr. Romney brings up the most recent 9/11 in Libya, Mr. Obama should just respond with, funny, the Republicans want to look into this little 9/11 when they were the party that fought against any investigation of the big 9/11, the real 9/11, where 3,000 Americans were killed, and the Republicans fought against looking into that. That should be his foil and his attack factor on me on that. But I,
Sam.
Well, you know, it's that's very tough, obviously, because part of what the White House has been able to do effectively with respect to this Libya attack is to say Mitt Romney went out of the gate and politicized it. He said that the president sympathized with the attacker. And, you know, he's been very critical of the handling of it, even as more intelligence has come out that complicates what Mitt Romney claims happened. And so if you're going to say, on one hand, Mitt Romney was far too political with the tragedy, right in the wake of the tragedy, then it's difficult for you then to turn around and say, you know what, we should have politicized, you know, we should have made more politics out of the initial 9/11. So it's a tough thing to handle. I will say the caller's probably right on one thing, which is that I do expect to hear a lot of George W. Bush, much more so than we saw in the first two debates. You know, Bush is, for better or worse, associated with a very disastrous foreign policy. And to the extent that Obama can say Mitt Romney wants to bring back the Bush doctrine, he surrounded himself with neocons, the same people advising George W. Bush will be advising Mitt Romney, I think that's a potent political attack. But with regards to the first 9/11 and now this 9/11, I don't know. I think that's a difficult proposition for the president.
Is it a factual statement to say that he's being advised by the same foreign policy people who advised George W. Bush?
Yes, but, you know, it's complicated because Mitt Romney, as I understand it, has several different types of ideological advisors. There are the same foreign policy people, for instance, Dan Senor, who was a spokesman of the Iraq Provincial Authority when we were there initially, is a top advisor in the Romney campaign. You have John Bolton, who was Bush's nominee for U.N. ambassador, who made it there on recess appointment, who is an advisor as well. But then you have some more moderates, more the traditional Republican non-interventionist types. But, you know, by and large, I would say you could factually state that some of the advisors for George W. Bush have resurfaced for Governor Romney. And, you know, I don't see why that wouldn't be a politically potent thing to use for the Obama campaign.
Scott in New Glarus, hi.
Good morning. Yes, I think a large component of national security is the strength of our economy. And I went to Freeport, Illinois Friday night to watch the Ed show about the Sensata factory and the outsourcing of those jobs to China. Now, this is a company, it's a high-tech company. They had record profits in the last quarter of over $500 million. It's not like they're a company going under. And it's just really causing problems for, of course, the people that have lost their jobs, the ones that have had to train the Chinese people, and then they ship the equipment out. You know, that's 51% Romney. He owns Bain 51%. He's a major shareholder. They're shipping these jobs out from a company that has made record profits, and they've asked him to come down there and talk about why is Bain doing this, and what can Romney maybe do. You know, he talks about jobs, creating jobs, 12 million jobs, he says. Why doesn't he start with 170 jobs that are being lost to China that he could do something about? I think this guy is just a transparent sociopathic prevaricator.
Sam.
He's talking about Sensata, and, you know, it's one of those stories that's been sort of bubbling under the radar. You know, 170 workers are going to lose their jobs by the end of the year. People are calling on Romney to intervene because, obviously, Bain Capital owns the company. It's tough. I mean, it would make sense politically, I guess, if Romney were to step up and say, listen, these jobs should be kept there. But what kind of power does he have over Bain Capital? But I think what the caller is getting at is this notion that, you know, Mitt Romney in his business career really wasn't in the game of job creation. He was in the game of wealth creation. And a lot of times that meant shutting down factories, cutting jobs, shipping them overseas, trying to find ways to wring a profit out of anything. And I thought the Obama campaign sort of brilliantly used that stuff during the course of the summer to paint him as this sort of out-of-touch plutocrat who really didn't understand middle-class interests. And what happened in the first debate was that Romney was very good at dispelling that image. He came across as someone who did care, and he said, you know, I'm in this for the 100%. You don't have a tax cut to benefit the wealthy. I care about the middle class. All the stuff that seemed so, you know, misplaced in the summer months, he dispelled. And what we're witnessing now is a frantic effort by the Obama team and allied Democrats to say, you know what, he was lying to you in the first debate. This is what he really is. And I think they're using Sensata as sort of a microcosm of it and saying, why can't you, if you care so much about this stuff, why don't you just come in and call on your own company to just stop doing what they're doing? And it puts Romney in a tricky situation. The thing is, the story really hasn't bubbled up to the national level as much as the Obama team and their allies probably like it.
Sam Stein, our guest, this part of All Things Political. He's political editor and White House correspondent for the Huffington Post and a contributor to MSNBC. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email, send us one of those if you would like, talk@WPR.org, or you can always leave messages for us on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program this Monday. Two recent under-the-radar news stories, the discovery of a new planet last week, and then we'll look at art theft in the wake of last week's heist of Picasso, Monet, Matisse, and other paintings from the Kunsthal Museum in Rotterdam. All right, let's go back to phone calls. Bill in Madison is our next caller for Sam. Hi, Bill.
Hello. Previous guest referred to Ohio and possibly Wisconsin or Wisconsin as being crucial for Romney's chances for actually winning the White House. I agree with that based on a story that's been also bubbling under the radar. We've been using that term bubbling under the radar for two or three times so far. This one is about a company controlled by the Romneys through one of the Romney's sons purchasing voting machines for use in Ohio for the now myself that raises the specter of, you know, election fraud, you know, in Ohio. I mean, if the voting machines are owned by one of the candidates.
Okay. Sam.
Yeah, well, that's another one of these stories that I've seen emailed, you know, with more frequency in recent days. There hasn't been good enough reporting on it for me to really weigh in. I haven't looked into it myself. but we're going to be looking into it. It's something that we're assigning reporters here to see if there's anything there. From the outside looking in, it's tough to make tough to weigh in on the merits of the story. Obviously, you know, people are always worried about the integrity of the election and what happens with the ballots cast. And it's worth noting that there have been several instances of voter suppression, essentially, that's happened by Republican operatives, taking registration forms and essentially throwing them out. And so people are very nervous about this stuff. I don't think it's risen to the level yet to claim a conspiracy or anything like that, and I think we do need to throw it out. On the mathematical aspects of the election that the caller referred to earlier, Ohio is sort of that critical state, right? If Obama wins there, that means he only needs Wisconsin and Iowa, or Wisconsin and Nevada, to get back to 271 electoral votes. And they seem to be, the Obama campaign seems to be very confident in Wisconsin. And any reporter worth his salt in Nevada seems to think that Obama's going to win there simply because of the demographics and registration numbers. So it comes down to Ohio, and I suspect that the Romney people know this and will be devoting a huge amount of resources to the state in the next 15 days, because without it, they're more or less done.
What do you think? Where does everything stand now? You watch this closely.
Yeah, it's tough to tell because obviously momentum changes, and it changes every day. And for instance, you'll see polls come out in the morning, and if you don't look at when the polls were conducted,
right,
you could get a different sense of what's going on
in the
race.
Absolutely right.
So this morning, for instance, CBS, New York Times, Quinnipiac put out a poll that showed Obama up by 5 in Ohio. The first commentary on it was that it was bad news for Obama because he had led the poll by 10 points in September. This is a totally different race in September, and the idea that Obama would hold on to a 10-point lead in Ohio is sort of silly. If you ask the Obama people, would they like to be up 5 points with 2 weeks to go in Ohio, if you had asked them that question about a year ago, they would have paid you $1 million for that opportunity. They would have loved it. So I think, all things considered, if you look at the early voting numbers, which do matter, and if you look at the electoral map, which does matter, and then you look at some of the swing state polling, I think the Obama campaign is in a better position than the Romney campaign. This is not saying that the election's over, but again, all the Obama campaign has to do is hold on to Ohio, hold on to Wisconsin, and win either Iowa or Nevada. And we're not even talking about Virginia, which is a dead heat in itself. So there's much more possibilities and pathways if you get Virginia in there. But that's a very simple pathway for Obama, and Romney has a very complex pathway.
We were talking to Nate Silver last week, and he indicated that things, once you reach a couple days after the third presidential debate, it's really hard to move polls at all. Would you agree with that? They're pretty much set.
If Nate says it, I agree with
him.
Yeah,
okay.
That guy's pretty smart. But, yeah, I mean, listen, there's one other thing after this debate tonight that could matter and could have an effect on people, and that's going to be the first Friday November when the next jobs numbers come out.
Yeah.
Now, of course, who knows what – people have developed different conspiracy theories about the jobs numbers in the past. So if they turn out to be good, I'm assuming there's going to be ways to dismiss them. But, you know, if they turn out to be bad, it could be really, you know, one of those emotionally sapping things for Obama. So that's gonna play a role. I don't think there are any endorsements out there that could change momentum, much like Colin Powell did in 2008 for Obama, where McCain's campaign manager, Steve Schmidt, said, oh, that endorsement really took the wind out of our sails. I don't think Colin Powell's going to do anything like that unless Romney says something absolutely insane tonight. So what we're looking at is, you know, tonight's debate, the employment numbers, and ground game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Obama campaign feels like they have a superior ground game. The Romney campaign feels like they have superior momentum. And Nate Silver's probably right. Once you get past the third debate, it's going to be tough to move those dials.
Mm. Sarah in Zion, hi.
Hi. Well, when I think of Romney and foreign policy, and I don't know, maybe you talked about this already, because I just started listening, but I remember just a few months ago he was in England and Israel saying things that were really clumsy and not very smart, maybe, and he was kind of he was kind of considered to be, like, foreign policy would a really weak point of his, and now the media isn't mentioning that at all, and I would think that maybe Obama would want to bring that up.
Yes, you would think Obama would bring that up. And I think he will bring it up. You know, the Obama campaign had a funny comment about that, which I think was something I'm going to summarize, but Mitt Romney offended Europeans about as much as Chevy Chase did in European Vacation. And it all tied to that trip to London to watch the Olympic Games, where he basically said, it doesn't look like they're necessarily ready with respect to security, which was offensive to Londoners. And they started chants against him. It was kind of bizarre. You know, foreign policy has been a weakness for Romney, and I don't think that's a big secret to anybody. He, in 2008, when the debate was largely on the war on terror, that was a real weakness to Romney as well. And so, you know, I fully expect that the Obama campaign will bring this up, that it wasn't just, you know, what happened in London on that trip that proved to be a problem. He insulted the Palestinians during that trip as well, saying that their economic plight was owed to, you know, social problems and cultural problems. So he had a few blunders on that trip, and I fully expect that they will be, you know, front and center when the night's over.
Sarah, thanks for the call. George in Milwaukee. Hi, George.
Yes, hi. Yeah, I do wish that Obama would perhaps look at two things tonight, if he gets a chance. And one is Mitt Romney's continuing to say that he supported the war in Iraq and thought that it was the right decision at the time. And so I guess I hope that Obama can take a riff off of that. And then secondly, I wish Obama would talk about how the United States' power is not diminished in the world. And I will say, you know, we spend something like the equivalent of the next 10 largest defense budgets. So I think those two things are in his favor.
Well, let's put aside the Iraq thing for a second, because we touched on how there's going to be an effort to, I think, to make Romney seem like an extension of the Bush doctrine. And so I fully expect him to bring up Iraq. With respect to the defense budget, this one's a bit more complex. Romney, as the caller does note, has asked for an increase in the defense budget. He wants defense spending to be 4% of GDP, which is a massive increase. It's not historically massive. It's about where we were historically average. But, you know, since our GDP has gone up, we would be spending a ton on defense. The problem is the issue of sequestration. And sequestration is what happens when we don't, you know, the fiscal cliff hits and we can't find money to cut. Then we're going to get, you know, a $500 billion cut in defense over the course of 10 years. Romney's been running very heavily on that in Virginia, which is a state uniquely affected by the military-industrial complex, and he's been running effectively on that. People in Virginia, especially in some certain communities, are really nervous about what it means through their livelihoods if we see those types of cuts. So if the president wants to make hay out of Romney's, you know, spending so much on defense, he risks reminding them that he's, you know, signed off on sequestration, which, of course, Paul Ryan did as well, but regardless, he risks reminding voters that he signed off on sequestration, which could in turn hurt him in Virginia.
Thank you, George, for your call. We go to Tony in New Berlin. Hi, Tony.
Hi. Yeah, just a quick question here or a comment or both. The president administration has advisors in the name of czars, and among those czars is Jeff Immelt, who is a CEO over at General Electric. And as I understand it, GE Medical Systems is going over to China. I'd like to hear a comment on that, please, and I'll take it off the air.
What's the question again? Is it about GE sending jobs to China?
Yeah, why don't you take that part of it?
Okay, I mean, well, the complicated thing, obviously, because Jeff Immelt was on the president's Jobs Council. I don't know if he's a supporter of the president necessarily, but he was on the Jobs Council. And the whole notion of sending jobs to China, you know, it's so deeply personal for people in the Midwest and in Ohio and Wisconsin, of course. You know, it's tough to overstate what kind of a effect these outsourcing charges have. I thought it was a really interesting moment in the last debate when Obama said some of these jobs aren't coming back. It was sort of one of those take your medicine type moments. Mm-hmm. And I thought he got actually more respect for it than I envisioned he would have, because it wasn't exactly pandering, you know. But I think people generally recognize that it's a different economy. The whole notion of outsourcing didn't happen under, you know, one president. It wasn't because of one president's policies. This is a multi you know, decade process that's taken place. And, you know, you have to figure out ways, whether it's through different technologies, whether it's investing in clean energy, to build industries that won't be affected by outsourcing. And, you know, the administration was very, you know, into the concept when it was early in, you know, early years crafting the stimulus. They're talking about home retrofitting, stuff like, you know, high-speed rail, literally stuff where you have to build in America. You can't ship those jobs to China because you're building stuff in America. But we don't hear that much about it anymore. And, one of the frustrations I hear a lot from Democrats is that, you know, Obama does have that as a second-term agenda item.
We need to stop at that point. Thank you, Sam, so much. Thank you for being with us. Sam Stein, who is White House correspondent for Huffington Post. We want to end this hour with comments from George McGovern, who wrote Abraham Lincoln, the 16th President, published at the end of 2008. This is from our show on February 2009. We'll talk more about him in the coming days, but we lost him over the weekend.
He had the strength of character and the force of the personality and control that while he felt miserable, he still kept up his professional life. And some historians have thought that that did two things. Number one, it strengthened his resolve to control his emotions and still use his energy and his life for constructive purposes. And secondly, as you suggested in your question, it made him more compassionate.
George McGovern. Same could be said of George McGovern. That was from his book, Abraham Lincoln. Thanks to Brett Jaspers and Rhonda Fanning, who produced this program. We'll return following the news.